This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 713 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. Israel has killed at least 416 Palestinians and injured at least 2,200 between September 10th and September 17th, according to official records from the Ministry of Health in Gaza. Airstrikes across Gaza, concentrated in Gaza City, have been constant and relentless. Israel has continued to obliterate high-rise towers, apartment buildings, tent shelters, and entire families trying to flee on foot and in vehicles. Journalist Islam Badr filmed the missile strike on the Ekbi Mosque in the Tufah neighborhood of Gaza City on Tuesday. Israel attacked the Beach refugee camp in western Gaza City this past week, shelling homes and shelters. Journalist Ayman Al-Hessi documented an Israeli airstrike on a home in the Beach camp on September 13th, which sparked fires inside adjacent buildings and structures. He said that over 3 days, the Israeli army attacked the camp with a barrage of shells and missiles. Gaza resident Jihad Madhoun captured this airstrike on a home in the camp on September 11th. On September 15th, Israel dropped the Gafri high-rise building in Gaza City. Reporter Ahmed Ibrahimi filmed this clip. The day before, Israel struck the Mahna Tower. Al Jazeera shared this video of an Israeli missile strike on a residential building in the Nasser neighborhood on September 12th. Videographer Hamza Kureka captured the moment an Israeli airstrike hit a building in the Rayas neighborhood on September 13th. That day, Israel also targeted the Palestine Stadium, where forcibly displaced families had sought shelter. Reporters Nahed Hajjaj and Saeed Hezbollah filmed the aftermath of the attacks as distraught parents rushed their injured children to Al-Shifa Hospital. Israel also targeted a vehicle carrying displaced Palestinians, including children, on September 16th, engulfing it in flames and killing everyone inside. Ibrahim Al-Khalili, a correspondent for Al Jazeera, reported from the Daraj neighborhood in Gaza City that same day. He had to report on the killing of many of his close family members.
I'm here today reporting from Gaza's Al Daraj neighborhood, east of Gaza City, where deadly Israeli airstrike flattened this complete residential block behind me. Many Palestinians have been confirmed killed, and at least 50 Palestinians are still trapped under the rubble. Tragically, many of my close relatives were among those killed in this airstrike.
That was Ibrahim Al-Khalili at Al Jazeera. Israel destroyed what was left of the Islamic University of Gaza, a prestigious institution that was one of the first universities to be bombed during the first few months of the genocide and had since been used as a makeshift shelter for forcibly displaced families. On September 14th, Israel shelled the already bombed out buildings three consecutive times. Rami Abdu of Euromed Human Rights Monitor said that, quote, after the first and second shellings, a number of displaced people returned to the site to try to retrieve some of their belongings. In the third shelling, high explosive bombs were used that directly targeted the building. Dozens of victims and missing persons are still under the rubble up to this moment. Journalist Abdelaziz Khalil filmed this clip of the attacks. On Wednesday, Israeli forces bombed an area near the front gate of Al-Shifa Hospital, where displaced families have sheltered in tents. The attack killed at least 13 people and wounded many others. Video and images of the aftermath of the attacks show people strewn on the ground in pools of blood or being carried by others in total panic. The day before, on Tuesday, Israel targeted the area around Al-Shifa Hospital with airstrikes. Journalist Mahmoud Abu Salama reported from the aftermath of Tuesday's attacks. He said, quote, an Israeli massacre on this street, crowded with citizens and inhabited by residents. On this street, there are martyrs and wounded people. The street is full of residents, as you can see. Compounding the massacres and destruction, the Palestinian Telecommunications Regulatory Authority said telephone lines and internet connections were down due to Israeli attacks on several main network routes supplying the region. Euromed Human Rights Monitor said that this leaves Gaza City in total communications blackout, isolating around 800,000 Palestinians and silencing their voices as Israeli attacks escalate. Israel bombed the Rantisi Children's Hospital in Gaza City on Tuesday. Dr. Munir Al-Bersh, the Director General of Gaza's Ministry of Health, reported that the specialized pediatric facility was struck three times in rapid succession, leaving 80 patients trapped in separate departments, including four children in pediatric intensive care and eight newborns in neonatal care. He said, quote, it is a scene where patients' breaths mingle with the roar of explosives and mothers' cries with the whistle of rockets. Al-Rantisi Children's Hospital, once a house of healing, has today become a field of death. On Tuesday, September 16th, Dr. Ali Tahrawi, a physician in a hospital in central Gaza, uploaded a video to his Instagram showing a toddler who was brought in after an airstrike, her face blackened from burns and her torso ripped apart with her internal organs spilling out. In his video, Tahrawi stands beside the little girl in shock, not saying a word, while he and the hospital staff try to dress her gaping wound and watch her take her last gasping breath. Tahrawi wrote on Instagram, quote, 2 years into this hell, and I have never seen anything like what I'm witnessing now. These days bring the most devastating, heart-shattering injuries, wounds so severe you stand frozen, wondering if even God could save them. We stood helpless, not knowing what to do. I felt this little girl's final heartbeats with my hands, pulsing through torn flesh. If images of torn and broken children are not enough to stop this madness, then what is? I am ready to sacrifice my life for this cause. I will never stop struggling for my people. But how can I, when what we are facing is nothing but death and evil? 17 hours into my exhausting shift, carrying the weight of unbearable stories, families escaping death in the north, only to face more death here, and others arriving with injuries that could not be treated there, I finally lay down to rest my back. But then came another airstrike. Minutes later, the ambulances arrived with the wounded. Among them was this little girl. I saw her heart stop beating, and I feel mine will stop soon. My message to the world is simple. If we are left to burn in this hell alone, then humanity itself has already died. This world is no longer human, and the silence that allowed all of this will haunt you forever. Activist and social media creator Tommy Marcus, who goes by Quentin Quarantino, and is on board one of the dozens of boats in the Global Samud Flotilla on their way to Gaza, uploaded this clip on Wednesday. Marcus says that he got in touch with Dr. Tahrawi to ask about the girl's name, something many people asked about on social media, and received this response from him.
Like many of you, the video this morning of the young child gasping her last breaths as you see her intestines fall out really affected me. And as I saw my post gaining more traction, I thought that it may be a nice thing to find out what her name was and share that on my page. So I contacted the doctor who uploaded the video, Ali, and I asked him. And unfortunately, her parents and her newborn brother were all killed, murdered in the attack. And there was nobody to confirm her name. So I just thought I'd let everyone know that.
As Israel's carnage in Gaza City escalates without limits, the Gaza Government Media Office estimates that nearly 200,000 residents have been forced to leave their homes under the threat of airstrikes and shelling. But the office says that more than 15,000 people returned to their neighborhoods earlier this week after failing to find adequate housing or basic necessities in the south. Al-Mizan Center for Human Rights reported that Israel's intensified attacks on multi-story residential buildings, quote, are part of Israel's plan to take over the city in a severe escalation of the genocide. Relentless and deliberate attacks on Gaza City's residential areas have generated a state of fear and panic among Palestinians, causing thousands to escape towards southern Gaza, particularly to Mawasi Khan Yunus. Most Palestinians fleeing Gaza City are forced to walk on foot, as transportation remains largely unavailable due to the lack of fuel, and in rare instances where transportation is available, the cost of moving their belongings soared to nearly $1,000. The extreme trauma of being forcibly displaced is compounded by the need to walk for hours on end while also experiencing famine, leading to severe exhaustion. Israel is currently trying to concentrate Gaza's entire population into so-called humanitarian zones in southern Gaza that amount to only 12% of Gaza's total area, Al-Mizan adds. The Gaza Government Media Office stated this week that, quote, the Al-Mawasi area, which currently shelters approximately 800,000 people and is falsely promoted by the occupation authorities as a humanitarian safe zone, has been subjected to more than 109 airstrikes and repeated shelling, resulting in over 2,000 deaths in successive massacres perpetrated by the occupation army within the Al-Mawasi area itself. These areas are completely devoid of the basic necessities of life, with no hospitals, no infrastructure, no essential services such as water, food, shelter, electricity, or education, making living there almost impossible, the media office added. Meanwhile, children and adults alike are continuing to die of starvation across Gaza. On Wednesday, the Gaza Health Ministry said it has until now recorded the deaths by starvation of 432 Palestinians, 146 of whom are children. One of the mechanisms that Israel and the United States have been using to impose and entrench starvation as a means of collective punishment and genocide has been through the private Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, or GHF. The United Nations Independent Commission of Inquiry on the Occupied Palestinian Territory, including East Jerusalem and Israel, has found that the GHF plays a significant role in the genocide, as it masquerades as a food aid distribution mechanism. Earlier this week, the UN Commission released a 70-page report that concludes that Israel, through its acts and intentions, is committing genocide against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. The Commission urged Israel and all states, quote, to fulfill their legal obligations under international law to end the genocide and punish those responsible for it. Quote, the intention of the Israeli authorities to continuously impose starvation and unlivable conditions of life for Palestinians in Gaza is also evident through the establishment and use of the GHF to maintain total control over aid distribution in Gaza, the report declares. Navi Pillay, the chair of the commission, read her remarks in Geneva on Tuesday as the report was published.
The goal of the Israeli government is abundantly clear as we continue to witness the destruction of Palestinians in Gaza. The Commission finds it is genocide. In our report, the Commission found that the Israeli authorities and Israeli security forces committed and are continuing to commit the following underlying acts of genocide against the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. One, killing members of the Group two, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group. Three, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part, and 4, imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group. On the specific intent of genocide, the Commission concludes that statements made by Israeli authorities are direct evidence of genocidal intent. The Commission also concludes that the pattern of conduct is circumstantial evidence for genocidal intent, and that genocidal intent was the only reasonable inference that could be drawn from a totality of the evidence. Therefore, the Commission concludes that the Israeli authorities and Israeli security forces have the genocidal intent to destroy, in whole or in part, the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip.
Included in the Commission's report are documented testimonies of Palestinian prisoners in Israeli detention, particularly children who have been raped, sexually assaulted, and tortured by Israeli prison forces. Considering the evidence in totality, the Commission says it finds, quote, that the Israeli security forces have intentionally inflicted serious bodily and mental harm on the Palestinians in Gaza. In her remarks, Pillay added that, quote, Israel has flagrantly disregarded the orders for provisional measures from the International Court of Justice and warnings from member states, UN offices, human rights organizations, and civil society groups, and continued the strategy of destruction of the Palestinians in Gaza. The Commission finds that the Israeli authorities had no intention to change their course of action. On the contrary, Israeli authorities have persisted and continued with their genocidal campaign in Gaza for almost 2 years now. Israel must immediately end the genocide in Gaza and comply fully with the orders for the provisional measures of the International Court of Justice, she added. Chris Sidoti, a member of the commission, spelled out the failure by obligated member states to stop the genocide.
The most significant aspect of the interim orders of 26 January 2024 was that every country in the world was put on notice by the International Court of Justice that there was a plausible risk of genocide in Gaza. And if it had not happened before that, it certainly happened then, that every country in the world became obliged under the law to take action, not to speak fine words, to take action to prevent genocide. There can be no doubt whatsoever that that obligation was activated on the 24th of January 2024, if not before. And in response to your question, that applies as much to India as, Jamie, it applies to Germany and the United States, as it applies to my country and every other country.
Chris Sidoti of the UN Commission of Inquiry. Israel, not surprisingly, accused the United Nations commissioners of being anti-Semitic and proxies of Hamas. Here was Sidoti's response.
Israeli Foreign Ministry today decried a distorted and false report and said that three individuals, so referring to the Commission of Inquiry, three individuals serving as Hamas proxies notorious for their openly anti-Semitic positions. Could you please comment on that?
These reports should be taken seriously, but honestly, the Israeli responses are becoming so boring. You know, they say the same thing every time. They're producing the responses by ChatGPT these days, and they spend so much money in the foreign ministry on propaganda, you'd think that they would actually come up with something original. I would want them to engage with the evidence, but they never engage with the evidence. They put the report into ChatGPT, and then they put out the standard response. So no one takes it seriously, and Jamie, you shouldn't either.
Turning quickly to the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces carried out mass arrest and abduction campaigns this past week in cities in the north, particularly in Tul Kerem. Qassam Moadi of Mondo Weiss reported that Israeli forces arrested at least 1,000 Palestinians in a single day on September 11th during a wide-ranging raid on Tul Kerem. Quote, the raid came following a roadside bomb attack on an armored Israeli military vehicle earlier in the day, taking place near a checkpoint outside the city. The attack wounded two Israeli soldiers, according to the Israeli Army Radio. The governor of the Tulkarem Governorate said that Israeli forces imposed a total closure on Tulkarem and conducted a campaign of home searches across the city, describing it as a systematic policy. The Israeli army's response was one of collective vengeance, said Hussein Sheikh Ali, a Tulkarem resident and local social activist. Ali told Mondo Weiss that, quote, the occupation soldiers began to go from house to house, searching and damaging people's belongings. The Israeli army arrested hundreds of Palestinian men and youth in the streets, Ali said, picking them up at random, based on who happened to be present at work or in the streets. Quote, they arrested most of them without even checking their IDs. They made them walk in a line down the street as Israeli forces directed them where to go. It was a show of force. That's from Qassam Wadi at Mondo Weiss. The Palestinian Prisoners Society said that Israeli occupation forces have detained approximately 120 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank over the last few days and has continued to escalate arrest raids in Al-Khalil, Jenin, Qalqilya, and Nablus. Wafa said that at least 30 Palestinians were detained between Tuesday evening and Wednesday morning alone. The total number of detentions in the West Bank since the beginning of the ongoing genocide on Gaza has reached approximately 19,000, including more than 590 women and approximately 1,550 children. These figures include those who were kept in detention by the occupation and those who were later released, but do not account for thousands of detainees from Gaza, the Palestinian Prisoners Society explained. In addition to mass arrests, Israeli bulldozers destroyed Palestinian greenhouses in Tulkarem on September 12th. And elsewhere in the northern West Bank, Israeli forces carried out raids in and around Nablus this week. Wafa News Agency reported that a young Palestinian man was injured on Tuesday evening during an Israeli military incursion into the town of Kusra, south of Nablus. Wafa's sources said that several military vehicles stormed the town and roamed its streets, sparking confrontations with local residents. Israeli soldiers attacked residents with live bullets, stun grenades, and tear gas canisters, injuring the young man with live ammunition. On Tuesday, two Palestinians were shot dead by Israeli soldiers in the village of Qalqilya, and their bodies were withheld, according to Wafa News Agency. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight What Is Sung Cannot Be Killed by Hazem Al-Ghozain, writing from Gaza. Quote, it's been 3 months since I listened to music. I haven't even sung to myself with my inside voice, which is what I always did in moments of sadness. The last tune I remember hearing and singing was Ya Rahin Al-Quds Kuduni Ma'akum, Take Me With You to Jerusalem, during my music troupe's rehearsal for a concert that was going to be part of the annual Rosy October Festival. I take part in it every year. Music was my refuge from the ear-splitting rocket strikes. In Arabic, we call the ecstatic delight that we feel with music tarab, or enchantment, and I used to find a kind of tarab in the musical intros to newscasts, those that were then followed by news of a new massacre, taking people and plants and places. I decided to use my voice and my guitar to bring a brighter tomorrow into children's dreams in the face of massacres and genocide. In March 2024, I set up a music tent where children could come to learn singing, performing, writing, and theater. I was with them every day until the army ordered our evacuation from that part of Khan Yunis. The dream was cut short, and with it, our togetherness. I didn't hear from the children for days, during which the Israeli military bombed the area. Eventually, we returned to the shelter, but only some of the children returned. Others did not. 20 of my students had been killed in the bombardment, I later learned. More had been injured. Our dream died with them. I decided not to bring new students to take the places of those who had been martyred. They are irreplaceable. Music is not an activity. It is a memory, a trace, a forever. Israel's genocidal war has not killed me yet, but it has killed the notions of humanity I once held to be truth. I would sing with the children and watch them smile, despite everything. One air raid was enough to destroy everything we had built and force us to move. The forced starvation would have extinguished the music tent if the bombs didn't. The children no longer have it in them to sing. They don't have it in them to hear or listen. Lining up for food or water is far more important now than any song of peace. The sounds they produce now are the rumblings of their empty stomachs, rumblings echoed throughout the city. But I did not write this to lament. I write to etch my voice into an eternity in the face of oblivion. The genocide did not mold me into a person who seeks survival. It made me a person who wants to be a trace, so that it can be said that in this land of forced starvation and annihilation, there was an artist who sang for hope, though he may not have harbored it. The song that is sung cannot be killed. Those are excerpts from What Is Sung Cannot Be Killed by Hazem El-Ghozain, a musician, writer, and theater practitioner in Gaza, on electronicintifada.net. It was translated by Hazem Jamjoum. And now, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Gaza. 9-year-old Banyas is a naturalist and has made videos on Instagram exploring Gaza's flora and fauna. Along with her cousin and her little brother, Iyas, she recently recorded this video at her grandpa's home in Gaza City, where she found a small insect friend in her cup.
Hey guys, today I'm in my grandpa's home in Gaza City, and you won't believe what I just found when I was drinking water in my cup. I found this little guy. This is the southern green stink bug. It's one of kind of bugs. It's buzzing.
Buzzing.
It's buzzing. Oh my God.
Wasn't
buzzing. It's trying, but her wings are soaking wet. That's why it's can. Poor little friend. She can't fly. It's so sad on her. Okay. Oh, and now we have a yes here. He wants to sing the stink bug. Yes, really loves insects.
What's that?
It's a stink bug. What's that?
And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.